The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Well, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue here, taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 18th day of December. We're moving right along. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We've got a great show lined up to you tonight. Up first, we'll talk to one of the best leadoff hitters and base runners in baseball history. Tim Raines will join us. In the second half, we'll welcome in the star of the new Fox series, Pitch. Lindenhurst native Dan Lauria will be here. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on GBB. We've got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by and give us a look, and then you can click and give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at Sports Talk 1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest, a left fielder in Major League Baseball for six teams from 79 to 2002, best known for his 13 years with the Montreal Expos, regarded as one of the best leadoff hitters and base runners in baseball history, the 1986 National League batting champion, seven-time All-Star, four-time stolen base champion. He has the most stolen bases, as a matter of fact, of any player who has not been inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Tim Raines. Tim, good evening.
Good evening. How's it going?
Great. It's great to have you with us tonight, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
No worries. Now, you're from Sanford, Florida. For those folks who don't know where that is, that's outside of Orlando. Now, you attended Seminole High School. You played a lot of football as well. Did you ever give a thought, Tim, to going into the NFL draft?
Well, when I was a kid coming out of high school, you know, my number one sport was football. It wasn't baseball.
Uh-huh, okay.
My dream was to be in the NFL as a kid. Obviously, I was about 5'8". When I was 12 years old, And I thought I was going to be a big kid, but I haven't grown since. So when I became a senior in high school, I noticed that everyone had gotten taller than me, but I was still the same competitor. Uh-huh. But size became a difference breaker between baseball and football.
Okay, now, the Expos select Tim Raines in the fifth round of the 77 draft. How did you feel about going to Montreal?
I just wanted a chance. I mean, I didn't really know that much about the Expos at the time, mm-hmm. but I remember going to a spring training game as a senior in high school. Didn't actually go to see the Expos. Actually, I went to see the Minnesota Twins, because the Twins was the closest team to where I live.
Okay.
So we went down to Daytona Beach, which is where the Expos had their spring training games. We saw the game. I remember, this is 1977, I remember seeing Dawson and Cromartie and Valentine and Carter and all those guys before I knew I was going to be playing with them. And you know, shortly after that, I was drafted by them. The team that showed the most interest was the Dodgers, and they told me they would probably take me in the first round. I ended up going in the fifth with the Expos. So, you know, you can't believe everything you hear.
No.
When it comes to draft positions, but I'm kind of happy the way it all turned out.
It turned out really well. Now, you were caught stealing for the first time in 81. You had 27 consecutive steals before that. Your runner-up for the National League's Rookie of the Year, who that year, folks, was taken by Fernando Valenzuela. Talk a little bit about breaking in and your rookie year and playing with all these guys that you mentioned.
Well, it was definitely exciting. I mean, wasn't really sure if I belong until, you know, I kind of got something going. I remember the first year, 79, I was called up at the end of the year, September call up. I didn't actually get an at-bat, didn't actually play the field, so I was more or less than a pinch runner. And I got my chance, you know, as a pinch runner. So I knew that obviously I had the skills to be a professional or be at the major league level.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like there was some work I needed to do as far as defense was concerned and hitting was concerned. And but I wasn't that far off.
Okay, yeah. Now, at the end of that season, you ran into a little trouble with substance abuse. I mean, it happens to the best of us. Talk to us a little bit about that and the lessons that you learned coming out of that that particular period.
Well, I was a young kid. I mean, I was 20, I think, turning 21, in a city.
Yeah.
Montreal is one of the top partying cities in the league. And I just kind of got caught up into something that I wasn't real familiar with. And, you know, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And the thing was, you know, when you get caught in those situations, you're out trying to have fun and it ends up, you get addicted.
Yeah.
To something that you wasn't real sure about. And it lasted for about 7-8 months. I knew it was something that my parents definitely didn't bring me up that way, and I was never that way until I got to the major league. So it took a little soul searching because it became a situation of, you know, do I do this or do I play professional baseball?
Yeah.
It was going to be one or the other. And I decided, and the way I grew up, I mean, I didn't want to let anyone down. You know, my parents, my siblings, my family at the time, my teammates, the city of Montreal. And, you know, but the way my father brought me up, I knew it wasn't going to be that hard because, you know, pretty much when I'm that type of guy, when I put my mind to something, I'm gonna stick with it. I'm gonna give it my all. And I had some guys, Andre Dawson, Warren Cromartie, Gary Carter, guys that were on my side that really helped me through it all. And, you know, my family as well. So it didn't take long for me to realize that that wasn't what I really wanted to do. Wanted to play professional baseball, and that's what I ended up doing.
Sure, things worked out pretty well for you when you put your mind to it, as you said, Tim. We got Tim Raines with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. We'll move along to 83. You resume your exciting play. You steal a career high 90 bases. Now, did anybody help you with your base stealing? Any mentor particularly along the way?
Well, Steve Burris was the guy that kind of got me going in the right direction. He
uh-huh.
was our first base coach at the time when I first got there. He mentioned to me that this is something that you can do very well, and we want you to be aggressive. We want you to be kind of a table setter. And I saw that in me, and I felt like it was something that I can do and I could do well. So he helped me with kind of figuring out the time between the pitcher going through his motion and the catcher catching the ball, the times from the catcher catching the ball, throwing the ball down to second base. And there were certain times, if the pitcher was like 1-3 or better, I felt like I had a chance to steal a base.
Yeah.
So we had clocks on all the pitchers. We had video on all the pitchers. So I knew before I went out there what those guys could do and couldn't do, and I tried to take advantage of.
Who was the toughest pitcher on you?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Usually, lefties will be a lot harder.
Definitely.
Than right-handers. But, you know, I can't say there was one guy that kind of kept me at bay. I think the one thing that I had to really be careful about was the slide step.
Uh-huh.
You know, guys were,
yeah.
You know, they would be a 1-4 guy, and all of a sudden they was 1-1. And I don't care how fast you are, you're not going to outrun the ball.
No.
if a guy got the ball to the plate and 1-1, unless there's a curveball in the dirt or a ball where the catcher can't handle, no one can steal the base. So I picked and choose the times that I went, and I was quite comfortable with whenever I took off. I felt like I had a chance to steal the base.
Sure.
I wouldn't take off unless I felt like I was sure. I mean, even though I was aggressive and I did it a lot, but I always felt like whenever I took off, I had a chance.
That bag was yours. Yeah, okay. Now, you played in the outfield with the Hall of Famer, Andre the Hawk Dawson. Another great ball player in Warren Cromartie. You mentioned the guys help you out when you ran into a little problem with your substance abuse. How did they help you on the baseball field?
Well, just their work ethic, the way they played the game. You know, Andre Dawson was a great player. And if I would have paid just to watch him play.
Yeah.
Let alone be beside him during the game. But, you know, he wasn't the type of guy that spoke a lot about how to play the game. I just watched him day in and day out. And, you know, I got in his ear from time to time. I asked a few questions. But all I had to do was just come to the ballpark and watch him do what he did. And if you see the success, you know, just watching the success, the way he went at it, he was a great player. So for me, I wanted to be that type of player. Gary Carter was another one. I mean,
yeah.
When those guys came to the ballpark, they came to play. And they played from the first inning to the last inning until that last out was made. And just being around that type of atmosphere kind of puts you in line.
Yeah.
Especially me being a left fielder and being a leadoff guy. I felt like I had to do my job as well. And doing my job was playing the way they played the game.
Certainly. Great examples. Now, you become a free agent in 86, but in spite of your play, Tim, no team makes a serious play for you. It's during that era of owner collusion. Now, could you explain that for people who may not know what collusion is and the toll that it took on you?
Excuse me. Well, I felt like in 86, it was an opportunity to check the market, you know, try to put myself in position to see what my market value was.
Right.
And it wasn't so much that I wanted to get away from Montreal, but I just wanted to see where I stood as far as free agency was concerned.
Sure, everybody wants to take a look. Yep, you're right.
And that was the first opportunity that I had in my career. So, but, you know, I feel like, you know, when you play the game, you know, they have those 6 years where they can control what you do, and all of a sudden I had the control. And it just so happened that the 1 year that I had control, I didn't really have any control.
Right.
And what happened was the owners got together and they came up with something as far as when guys became a free agent, there would be no other team outbidding the actual team that player was on. And not only did they not bid, but the Expos publicized my number, the number that they had given me.
Hmm.
So now all the teams in Major League Baseball knew how much the Expos had offered me that year. And the thing was, no one was going to go higher than what the Expos offered me. And true enough, it happened that way.
Yeah.
I remember going down to Kissimmee, where the Houston Astros, they had shown some interest. I went down there, and they offered me half of what I was already making.
Boy.
The previous year.
Yeah.
So they was making offers that, you know, unless you really want to go to a city.
Yeah, ridiculous.
There was no way that you was going to take the offer. So I ended up not signing at the deadline back with the Expos. So it cost me spring training and the first month of the season of that 87 year.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that was collusion, folks. The owners coming together to really put the clamps down on some of these great players. Now, you ended up leaving Montreal and getting traded to the White Sox. How did you feel about leaving Montreal?
Well, I love being in Montreal. I mean, I spent, at that time, it was my 11 years there. And I just felt like it was time to move on because we were in the middle of another rebuilding stage.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of years there. I still love the city. I mean, to this day, I mean, if there's anything I can do in Montreal to help them get a new franchise, you know, I would do it. But it had got to a point to where I was getting up in age. I was in my 30s. So in order for me to get an opportunity to play in the playoffs or get a chance to get to the World Series, I felt like my best chances were to go somewhere else. And and when the chance came to go to Chicago, that was the in 91. Frank Thomas, Robin Ventura, all those guys and a great pitching staff at that time. There was a young team.
Black Jack McDowell, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Alex Fernandez, you know, and there was a few other guys that were great pitchers as well. So I just felt like it was an opportunity for me to go to an organization that had a chance, and it wasn't going to be any more rebuilding, but had a chance to win a championship.
Well, in 95, you get your chance. You win two World Series rings with the New York Yankees. A lot of folks around here remember Tim Raines with the Yankees. How did you feel during your time with the Yankees? Yeah, I know you contributed to the clubhouse atmosphere, being the veteran that you were, but you were also productive when called upon to hit.
Well, I always felt like, you know, the toughest thing was making the decision to go to New York because, you know, playing in Montreal wasn't a real big media city. And then going to Chicago, which is not as big a market as New York.
Right.
So when you go to New York, you have to be prepared to take the good with the bad. And I think some guys can handle it and some guys can't. I felt like I could handle it. I mean, even though I played in some small market, probably one of the smallest markets in baseball at the time, the 12 years I've spent in Montreal. But, you know, going through Chicago for those 5 years kind of got me prepared, I felt, to go to New York. And I think New York was a team that had a lot. They were just trying to win a world championship. I mean, George Steinbrenner would bring guys in to win it. And I had that opportunity. I tried to take full advantage of it because I was running out of time. I was in my 16th or 17th season.
Right.
And playing on a team full of veterans. You know, the youngest guys on the team was Jeter, Posada, Mariano, and Pettit.
Pettit, right.
You know, those were young guys, but we had the experience in the right positions. I mean, Jeter was, you know, coming off. He had his best year, I felt. It was his rookie season. But he kind of took control of that team from day one. But, you know, having you know, veterans like O'Neill, we had my first year, we had Wade Boggs.
Right, Wade Boggs. Well, how about Strawberry? Strawberry was on that club.
Strawberry
with me.
Came,
yeah.
And Cecil Fielder.
Ah, yeah.
We had some guys that were great players in other organizations. But I tell you, that team was probably one of the most unified teams I had ever played on. Even though we were like a scattering box of major league players that had came to one team. And I had the most fun in baseball playing with that team. Not only that, we had a lot of fun playing, we were able to win it all. And that was, you know, my first chance at a world championship, win it. And, you know, that's what baseball players play for. They play to win world championships. And that was my opportunity. And I was happy that I got a chance to not only win a world championship, but, you know, to win it in New York. That was quite exciting.
How was it playing for the boss, Tim?
I loved it.
Most guys I talk to, in fact, every guy I talk to that's played for George says the same thing.
I mean, I love it. I mean, he wants to win. And, you know, as a player, you love to have a winner love to have an owner that wants to win. You know, it might cause you your job, but if you're a part of the Yankees and George Steinbrenner was running things, you know that he would do anything in his power to try to win championships. And if you were a part of that, you had a chance.
Yeah. A great man. He was up for the Hall of Fame this year. Didn't make it. Controversial people made it in, namely Commissioner Selig. But that's a story for another day. You had 808 steals in your career, Tim. Tim Raines with us tonight. The fourth highest total in Major League history behind Ricky Henderson, the great Lou Brock, and the guy, I believe it's his birthday today, Ty Cobb. What about Cooperstown? I mean, you're up for the 10th time coming up in January. What are your feelings?
A lot better than I've ever felt, you know, out of the 10 years that I've been on the ballot. Last year, I went in, you know, started at 55%, ended up getting up to, you know, 69.9, something like that.
Yeah.
And I just felt like for it being my ninth year and having another year left, the chances was great. I mean, it's my last year this year. I won't have another chance. And if it's anything like it was last year, I felt like I have a really good chance of getting there. But this is the most excited that I've been over the 10 years. Make it or not, I'm going to still be the same guy. But if that phone rings,
oh boy,
on January the 18th, I'm going to be a very happy guy.
You even got the date down, Tim, right? You're all set. Yeah. Clear all phone lines for that call from Cooperstown. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, man, I hope you make it. I go up every year for the inductions. And I'm a Mets fan, so last year was special with Piazza finally making it in. And you with 69.9% last year, you certainly have a good chance. You, Bagwell, maybe Vladimir Guerrero. We'll see what happens, as you say, on the 18th. But we're certainly hoping for you. What are you doing these days, Tim?
Well, I have twin daughters that are 6 years old.
So there you go, right?
That's all I have to say.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, boy. You're looking to get back in the game at all?
Well, I'm in the game. I work with the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm a base running outfield coordinator. I've been with them for the last 4 years. This is my fifth year, going into my fifth year. It's something that I know quite well, and you know, I'm kind of enjoying what I'm doing. I mean, I've been in baseball all my life, and for me, I feel like it's an opportunity to give back to the game by being able to work with all these young kids that are trying to make it to the major leagues, and all the help that I can give them, and hopefully, you know, the 8, 9, or 10 guys that I've been able to work with get an opportunity and become major league players.
Yeah, that's certainly great that you want to give back. Now, as we said, it's been an honor and pleasure speaking with you tonight, Tim. I thank you for spending part of your Sunday night with us. It was great to finally hook up with you, and we hope to see you up in Cooperstown this summer.
Well, thank you very much, and I really appreciate it. And again, I apologize for last Sunday.
Nah, no worries. No worries, Tim.
I was definitely going to make sure I took care of it this Sunday. So thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it, and thank you for all those kind words.
Thank you, Tim. As we said, we enjoyed it, and hopefully we'll have you back someday.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Take care. Tim Raines, folks. Up next, we'll talk to the star of the new Fox series, Pitch, Lindenhurst native Dan Loria. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you this evening. I hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240. Jets lose convincingly to the Dolphins. Move along, folks. Nothing new to see here. Giants and Detroit Lions. Giants take that game. And the big one tonight, Dallas and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Big D. So we'll have an eye on that one for you. My next guest is a Lindenhurst native who is best known for his role as Jack Arnold, the father in the TV series The Wonder Years, and for his magnificent portrayal of Coach Vince Lombardi on Broadway. He's currently the skipper of the San Diego Padres on the Fox series Pitch. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Dan Loria. Dan, good evening.
Good evening, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. We're sitting on a very cold, blustery Route 109 in West Babylon tonight.
Yeah, well, I'm out here in L.A. It's 65 degrees and the sun's already down.
Ah, good for you, buddy. Now, listen, your idea. Give me an idea of your days growing up in Brooklyn.
Well, I was born in Brooklyn, but I moved at a very young age out to Long Island.
Okay.
I really grew up Copenhagen, Lindenhurst.
Okay. Life in Lindenhurst now. You graduated from the high school, which is now the middle school on Wellwood Avenue, and you played varsity
right.
football there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank God for football. It was the only way I could get to college.
So. Yeah. You also taught phys ed at the high school.
Well, when I came out of the Marine Corps, before I went for my master's, I went back to my old high school as a substitute. But my undergraduate degree was actually in U.S. history.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
So I taught more of that than I did PE. But they put me, brought me in every day because they were making me coach.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. Now, it's funny because I have a friend down in Florida who was in the Marine Corps, and he attended Southern Connecticut State University. So it's sort of like a parallel there, although he's not on TV. How did you enjoy your time in the Marine Corps, Dan?
Well, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Exactly.
Yeah, I had the great fortune of my company commander overseas was Captain Fulford, who became four-star General Fulford. He was in charge of all the troops in Desert Storm. He just retired. It was the only time in the history of the Marine Corps they had three four-star generals, and he became the head of all NATO forces. First time American was in charge of all NATO forces. And we're still in touch, and he was one of the finest men I've ever known.
Outstanding, yeah. You're best known probably, Dan, for your portrayal of Jack Arnold in the great series The Wonder Years that some of us remember so fondly. How was your experience on The Wonder Years? Give us a little insight.
Well, you know, it's, for an actor, it always depends on the writing. And the writing on The Wonder Years was the best on television. While we were on, we won the Emmy every year for writing. And Neil Marlins and Carol Black, who wrote it and created it, they left after 18 episodes. And Bob Brush was our head writer. And he, even Fred Savage will tell you, he was the real star of The Wonder Years. Now, working with kids, it's... they were wonderful. We didn't have any stage mothers or anything like that. But you got to remember, every time you see a close-up of me talking to Fred, Fred wasn't there. He was in school talking to an ex on a chair, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the way that works. So it was a little difficult, but it forced you to concentrate, and the writing was so good. And, of course, Fred and Danica were just wonderful.
Now, where was
this? I'm still in touch with Fred and Danica and Josh Sabiano and Allie Mills and, you know, all of them. So.
Classic show, definitely, Dan. Now, it was supposed to be set in, well, one of the writers was from Huntington. He wanted it set there, but it really was any town USA. But I always found it weird. Fred Savage with his throwback New York jet jacket, and then you see mountains down the street.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah. And every road reference was Long Island.
Yeah.
Turnpike, 110, you know, it was all those areas, you know, so it was enjoyable. Neil and I would go round and round because he was a little younger than me, and, you know, he went to Ward Melville when they were the top dogs out in Suffolk, and, of course, when I was at Lindenhurst, we were the top dogs. So even now, if we see each other, we tease each other about who is the better school to go to. You know?
Yeah, the Lindenhurst still doing well in football, Dan.
Yeah, they came back up again.
Yeah, they're one of their big rivals is William Floyd now, out in out in Shirley. You also
when I was in school, they didn't even exist.
No, yeah, neither did the high school.
Yeah.
That's great, though. You played James Webb, who people may not realize. He was the head of NASA from the Kennedy administration to the Johnson administration in that great miniseries done by Ronnie Howard and Tom Hanks, From Earth to the Moon. Yeah.
Earth to the Moon. And the second episode that I did, I had the real privilege of being directed by Tom Hanks, who... You know, you hear all these stories about what a nice guy Tom Hanks is. Well, he's even nicer.
Wow.
He's a real gentleman. Great guy.
And how about working with Opie, with Ronnie Howard?
Well, I didn't work with him on that, but if you watch the Wonder Years, Allie's mother, she did two episodes. It's actually Ron Howard's mother.
Ah.
And... his mother and father, Rand Howard, it would come on the set, and I knew all, you know, I'm a big old movie buff, and I knew the westerns that Rand Howard was in, and we had such a good time talking on the set. And years later, when I ran into Ron Howard, He came out of his way, came over, and said, "I can't thank you enough for how you treated my dad."
Nice.
You know, so very nice man, Ron Howard. Well, one, you know, you talk Ron Howard, you talk Tom Hanks. This, you know, our business is funny. It's like any other business. 15% of the people I work with are total jerks, and 85% are great people. The only difference between my business and your business is we promote the 15% that are jerks.
Yeah.
But Ron Howard and Tom Hanks, they're the best.
That's pretty good company, Dan. Dan Lauria with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Also, Rance Howard was in a couple of episodes of Seinfeld, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
And Clint Howard, too. When they go out to L.A. To find the Smog Strangler, Clint Howard's in that episode, right? Remember that one?
Yeah, no, Clint. Yeah, I see Clint every once in a while, usually on a golf course.
Yeah. So, and your appearance as Vince Lombardi drew raves, Dan, when you were on Broadway. Give us a little insight on how you were able to pinpoint Coach Lombardi so well and seemingly actually become Vince.
Well, you know, I was directed by Tom Cale, who just won the Emmy and the Tony, and my partner was Judith Light, who's the best. So that made being on stage very easy. I had a great cast. But to answer your question, it wasn't as hard as people think because of the NFL. They couldn't have been nicer. The Mara family, especially John, the grandson, they were there all the time. If I needed to talk to Bart Starr, 10 minutes later, he was on the phone. Dave Robinson would come to our rehearsals. And every Thursday night, we'd have a talk back with one of the great Packers. Jim Taylor spoke twice.
Wow.
And it was so I got to tell you, Bill, every one of them would start off with a hysterically funny story about Vince Lombardi. But within 10 minutes, every one of them would be in tears.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. They love the guy.
Yeah. A great figure in NFL history, and Dan Lauria did a great job portraying him. Now, in 2012... Madison Square Garden, A Christmas Story. You played the part of Gene Shepard. Was that? Did you have any admiration for Gene before that?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, you and I grew up in the times when storytelling was an art.
I mean,
I still remember listening to Burl Ives and Tennessee Ernie Ford and Orson Bean, and you know, Gene. Gene was right there with them, and my father used to Sunday nights put on the radio, and we would listen to him.
Yeah.
I mean, the irony of me being in a musical—I don't even sound good in the shower.
Yeah, and, I know. Me neither. Yeah.
What my dear friend Wendy Malik, I think my manager called her before he called me, because she texted me a message. I'm sitting on my porch, and a pig just flew by.
Oh, no.
I'm wondering what's she talking about? And then 10 minutes later, my manager called me and said, "You are going to be in a Broadway musical." And I just laughed. The first day of rehearsal, John Randall, our director, great guy, he said, "Dan, you have to come in on an 8 count." And I said, "Count slower."
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Whatever that is, yeah.
I'm moving on.
Oh, man.
But I loved it, and it was a lot of fun. You know, the audience came in with a little chip on their shoulder, you know, "What are you doing to my favorite Christmas story?" And the play was actually better, and the standing ovations and response from the audience was just wonderful.
Outstanding, yeah, the classic Christmas story. Getting back to the Wonder Years for one second, Dan. The character of Jack Arnold, he kind of represents the viewpoint of the silent generation that grew up during the Depression and came of age during the Second World War. He was in the Korean War. Do you feel that the character of Jack was confused or angered by the changes taking place in the 60s with his kids, with society in general?
Yeah, well, he played one of those, you know, fathers that, you know, nose to the grindstone.
Oh, yeah.
Take care of your family. And had, he had very little understanding of it. But when push came to shove, he always stuck up for his family.
Yeah. You
know? So we did a couple of episodes. One with John Corbett from Northern Exposure, who he was drafted and was going out with my daughter, and he was talking about going to Canada, and Mike Jack would not understand that.
No.
So I wouldn't say, you know, he was, I would say Jack was a liberal Republican. Remember those guys?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You know okay. The Nelson Rockefeller, the Eisenhower voter who belonged to a union, that kind of guy.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Now, getting to Pitch, the great new series on Fox. It's set in the confines of Major League Baseball. For those folks who are unfamiliar, a young female pitcher noted for a screwball comes to be the first woman to play in the major leagues for the San Diego Padres. Now, the young actress who plays Kylie Bunbury. She is a star in the making, isn't she?
Oh, she's the next Halle Berry.
Yeah.
No, no matter what happens, we haven't been picked up yet, but no matter what happens to Pitch, Kylie's off. She looks just like Lena Horne, and I think she should do the Lena Horne story. And she sings. So, but she is one of the nicest people I've ever worked with. Just a sweetheart.
Definitely.
We have a great cast. We got Dan Fogelman and Rick Singer and Kevin Falls as our writers and creators. You know, I've been on shows that have gotten good reviews and deserved them, like the Wonder Years. But this, we've gotten wonderful reviews for Pitch, and believe me, it's deserved. They work hard. It's a good show. And
rightfully
Major
so.
Major League Baseball has been wonderful. They've gone out of their way to help us, and now they're going to stream the show on the Major League Baseball channel.
So. Can't beat that. Yeah, Ginny Baker, folks, is the name of the character that Kylie Bunbury plays on Pitch. Now, she's a great role model for young female athletes.
Oh, I can't tell you the fan mail we're getting from mostly from women softball coaches, high school and college, on what this show means to them. It's really Kylie's really an inspiration. And if you've ever seen her in an interview, she's just such a classy lady.
Now, people,
and we got a lot of good people. Mark Consuelos and
definitely
MP, Mark Paul Geisler, and you know, we just got the best cast around.
For those people who may not remember, Mark Paul is from the classic series Saved by the Bell, and he
NYPD Blue.
Right. Yeah. Now he plays Dan, the great catcher Mike Lawson, the veteran who's really coming to the end of his career. Does he ever smile?
In real life, he plays such a hard ass.
He does. Dan. Mike Lawson is a tough guy.
Yeah, and he's been a, that just shows you what kind of what a fine actor he is. Because in real life, he's a very gentle soul. He's a good guy, and he directs. So it's like having another director on the set. You know, he knows where it's lit. He knows how to hit his mark. He does the scene from beginning to end without stopping. He never says, "Let me say that line again." You know, he tries to really give a performance.
And Mark Consuelos, people will know Mark Consuelos as the husband of Kelly Ripa, who does her show here in New York every morning.
Right, he gets hosts sometimes, but you know he's a fine actor. He was on soaps for years.
Yeah,
I don't know if you watch Pitch, you see how his character just keeps evolving. You know,
now is that a thrill? Dan, to put on a big league uniform and go to work?
Oh, sure, and walk out on, Petco Park. And
sure, yeah.
And the Dodger Stadium and have all these pros come around and, you know, shook hands with Willie McCovey.
Nice.
Willie McCovey's nephew, Tony, is our sound guy. So it's been wonderful.
Outstanding. Now, you also have Dick Enberg on the show.
Yes.
A Hall of Famer.
Yeah, but they all love him. I haven't met him yet. I've been trying to go over, but they shoot most of his stuff, off another stage.
So. Yeah, and Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko from the Giants have appeared on the show as well.
Oh, sure. John Smoltz and Buck. Yeah, we've had them all.
We enjoy it very much. Smoltz is a good man, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and he's funny. He's a funny guy.
Now, what's coming up for you, Dan? And anything you're looking for pitch to get picked up, what else you doing? Anything?
Well, I'm a little bit in limbo now because my love is always to go back to the theater, and I can't commit to a play until I know what our schedule on pitch is.
Okay.
So, by the contracts we signed, literally they can wait till June 15th to tell me whether we're going back or not.
Oh man.
So, yeah, I know. If they said right now we're going to go back, I start work in August, I'd be back in New York doing a play.
Yeah, that's where your heart is. That's wonderful. Well, I tell you, Dan Laurie, it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight. Thanks for taking the time out of your Sunday night to be with us.
Anytime, Bill, and thanks for watching the show. Appreciate it.
No worries. You take care, Dan. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take care. Dan Lauria, folks, from the Fox Series Pitch. What we'll do now is take a little look at the Hall of Fame ballot, which we'll be discussing. Hopefully Tim Raines will be elected. We'll take a look at the Hall of Fame ballot for 2017, which will be voted on January 18th, it is, as we spoke to Tim Raines about. Several guys coming up towards the end of their time on the ballot. Tim Raines, this will be his 10th year. Jeff Bagwell, the great Houston Astros first baseman. Trevor Hoffman, the closer for the San Diego Padres. Three of five players, along with the electees for 16, Ken Griffey and Mike Piazza, who received at least 67.3% of the vote. You have to garner 75% of the vote to be elected. So hopefully Tim Raines gets that this year and he'll be elected to the party, up in Cooperstown. Returning to the ballot, as we said, Bagwell, Raines, Trevor Hoffman, Curt Schilling, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Edgar Martinez. This is his 8th year. Mike Mussina, Lee Smith. This is his 15th and final year on the ballot. A great closer for many clubs. Fred McGriff, it's his 8th year on the ballot. Jeff Kent, Larry Walker, Gary Sheffield, Billy Wagner, and bringing up the rear, Sammy Sosa. People are wondering whether this is the year that the steroid candidates get a little more consideration from the writers because of the election of Bud Selig, who kind of oversaw that whole steroid era as commissioner of Major League Baseball. The analogy I've heard used about Selig's election and his role in the steroid era was he watched the building go up in fire, and then he called the fire department to try to put it out. That was his role, really, in the steroid era. Take a look at some of the candidates. Jeff Bagwell, 4-time All-Star, 3-time Silver Slugger Award winner, unanimous choice for NL MVP in 1994. Finished in the top 10 of the NL MVP voting 5 other times. He added a gold glove at first base to his resume in 94. The 1991 NL Rookie of the Year, he went on to lead the league in games played 4 times. And run scored 3 times, an Astro for all 15 seasons of his career, and he's hit 449 home runs, the most in Houston franchise history. Casey Blake is on the ballot, doesn't even deserve a vote, but probably will get one. Barry Bonds, we know his resume, baseball's all-time home run king, 762. He won 7 NL MVP awards. The most valuable, the most league MVPs of any player in history. 14-time All-Star, 12-time Silver Slugger Award winner, 8-time Gold Glove winner in his position in left field. Also set the single-season home run mark with 73 back in 2001. Those of you who remember that. He led the National League in walks, including a big league record 232 in 2004. He led the league in on-base percentage 10 times and sluggage percentage 7 times. Collected seasons of 100 more RBIs and 100 more runs scored 12 times each. In addition to the home runs, he's also baseball's all-time leader in walks, intentional walks. Ranks among baseball's top 10 best in career runs, total bases, RBIs, slugging percentage, on-base percentage, and games played. He was a pennant winner with the National League's San Francisco Giants. We all know about the steroids. Is this the time Barry Bonds gets elected or gets further consideration from the Baseball Writers Association? We'll have to wait and see. Pat Burrell is on the ballot again. Doesn't deserve to be. Not nearly a Hall of Famer. Orlando Cabrera, same deal. Doesn't belong on the ballot, but he's there. Let's take a look at who else. 1 second, folks. Lost my spot here. Here we go. Further down, Cabrera, as we said, doesn't belong. Pat Burrell doesn't belong. Mike Cameron, fine ball player, not a Hall of Famer. Roger Clemens, let's take a look at him. Is this the year that Clemens gets further consideration for the Hall of Fame? 11-time All-Star, won a record 7 Cy Young Awards and received Cy Young votes in 5 other seasons. Named the 1986 AL MVP with the Boston Red Sox, finished top 10 in league MVP voting 5 more times. Won the pitching triple crown in back-to-back seasons, which was 97 and 98, and led his league in ERA 7 times, second only to Lefty Grove, who had 9 ERA titles, the great Robert Moses Lefty Grove, who's in the Hall of Fame, of course. Also led his league multiple times in shutouts, strikeouts, wins, win percentage, complete games, innings pitched, and games started. Tallied 6 20-win seasons, 15 seasons with 200-plus innings, and 12 200-plus strikeout seasons. Ranks among the game's best in career strikeouts, 3rd all-time. Game started 7th and wins 9th all-time. 2-time world champion with the Yankees in 99 and 2000. Roger Clemens, is this his year? J.D. Drew is on the ballot again. Another guy, decent ball player. Does not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. Vladimir Guerrero, a lot of people think this guy's going in this year with the class of 2017. 9-time All-Star and 2004 American League MVP. Played 16 seasons for the Expos, Angels, Rangers, and Orioles. In addition to his 2004 Most Valuable Player season, he finished in top 10 of his league's MVP voting 5 other times, and won 8 Silver Slugger Awards, 7 in the outfield, and 1 as a designated hitter. He drove in 100 or more runs 10 times. He batted .318 for his career and totaled 449 career home runs. Decent credentials for the Hall of Fame. Vladimir Guerrero will be on many people's ballot this year in the Baseball Writers Association of America. Carlos Guillen. No. Trevor Hoffman, coming back for another try. The second most successful closer in baseball history with 601 saves, will make his ballot debut. Hoffman, who used a designated changeup to overwhelm hitters for 18 years, was the first pitcher to reach the 500 and 600 save milestones. It's a major key to the Padres' run of success in the late 1990s. He pitched in 7 All-Star games, led the National League twice in saves, and recorded at least 30 saves in 14 out of 15 seasons from 95 to 2009. Top 10 finisher in the Cy Young Award voting 4 times, also finished among the top 10 in league MVP voting twice. In addition to his remarkable saves total, Hoffman possesses the second most games finished and the 11th most games pitched in Major League history. Trevor Hoffman, good credentials for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Jeff Kent on the bubble. Not too sure about Jeff Kent. Derek Lee. No. Edgar Martinez, another guy with Hall of Fame credentials, will be knocking at the door to Cooperstown this year. The great designated hitter for the Seattle Mariners. Fred McGriff, a good ball player, not a Hall of Famer. Melvin Mora. Come on now, people. Melvin Mora? Be serious here. Come on. This is the Hall of Fame we're talking about. Mike Mussina, very good credentials for the Hall of Fame, will be knocking at the door for several years. Maglio Ordonez, decent ball player, not a Hall of Famer. Jorge Posada, good ball player. Sorry, Yankee fans, not a Hall of Famer. Tim Raines, great credentials for Hall of Fame. Could be his year this year. Manny Ramirez, another guy with great credentials. The steroid era looms with him as well. We'll see what happens. Edgar Renteria, don't make me laugh. Arthur Rhodes, again, be serious. Pudge Rodriguez, good credentials. We'll see what happens. Freddie Sanchez, ugh. Kurt Schilling, again, a guy who will be on the bubble. Gary Sheffield, 500 home runs, will not make it to the Hall of Fame. Lee Smith, good credentials. Sammy Sosa, again the steroid question. Matt Stairs, be serious. Jason Varitek, again, Billy Wagner, a good closer, not a Hall of Famer. Tim Wakefield, not a Hall of Famer. Larry Walker, a good ball player, but not a Hall of Famer. Taking a look at the class of 2017, folks. And that will do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Tim Raines and Dan Loria, my engineer, Brian Graves, and you for joining us. Stay tuned for hour number two on Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you Sunday, January 15th, 2017. Happy holidays to all. Till then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.